Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey, good day, everybody. Wherever you are in the world, we are here with one of the most in-depth researchers and most prolific author. I just looked at all of the books Kirby Summers has written, and it is a massive amount. All of Kirby's links are in the description, YouTube channel, books, Substack, X, etc. So very important that we please support her important work. She's really ruffling some feathers with this stuff, with the story that never dies. And now Kirby's been looking at the 18,000 emails, and she sent me some snippets, and my head is just spinning as to, like, why are these not front page of the news right now? Because this information is so pertinent, especially showing, you know, Maxwell, what she said about her relationship with Jeffrey and what the emails present. But anyway, huge thank you, Kirby, for analyzing these for us and coming up with this information.
Well, thank you for having me back, Sean. I think it's really important we stay on top of this. This may be our window into continuing to demand that more information is released by the government, because they have a lot of things. So, for example, we're talking today about Bloomberg Magazine, who is basically, they're a business weekly magazine, but they obtained like a treasure trove, like, right, approximately 18,000 emails from just one of Jeffrey Epstein's Yahoo accounts. Now, this is important to note, because these emails, while they only shared a couple of them, they're between, the ones that they shared are between Ghislaine, who claimed, I will go over everything. I didn't have a lot to do with him. Well, we're going to see how she lied again. Not that that's new to anybody who's following us. But I mean, however, so these emails, they reveal really dark things. I mean, it reinforces, number one, again, the fact that she lied to Todd Blanche, the second highest official in the Department of Justice. I mean, when you read this, because you're on my Substack, what did you think when you realized that, I mean, we knew she was going to lie, but the extent?
So it's as if they lie with certainty and confidence and a beautiful English accent in the case of Ghislaine Maxwell. And anyone who watches that and looks at her confidence and her certainty and this eloquent accent, it's going to think, perhaps lean, you know, if they don't know any better, if they don't know the history of her like you do, they're going to think, this lady sounds like she's telling the truth. But then when you see the emails in print, timestamp, the dates, emails sent, the exchanges between her and Jeffy, you realize these people are the most polished, conniving, manipulative psychopaths on the face of the earth. And it is just so tricky. They're like magicians.
Well, you know, it's a good point. They were friends with magicians, right? We know they had magicians in their circle. And we know that intelligence agencies also use magicians to teach them various tricks. Well, Ghislaine is very adept. She is a serial liar. You know, she was given this queen for a day thing that we know means that whatever she said to Todd Blanche, well, we're not going to prosecute you, except there was a caveat, wasn't there? She wasn't supposed to lie. So the question becomes, as we go over the contents of these emails, which are shocking, I'll tell you, shocking. And I'm sorry that you can't really show them. From now on, if I send you any emails, I'll just blank out the email address. But she lied. And so the question becomes, will she be prosecuted for perjury, right? I mean, that's the question that I have. Because if you recall, during her trial, on the menu for the things that she was being tried for were two cases of perjury. So this is during the preceding administration. And just as her trial was going to court, the judge presiding over the trial got, a promotion to the Second Court of Appeal. So Judge Judith Nathan given a wonderful promotion. And what happened? The two times that she was going to be charged with perjury, those things disappeared. However, we now know that despite whatever voice Ghislaine Maxwell wishes to use while speaking to either Todd Blanche or anyone, she's a liar. So we're going to highlight some of the important things. Now, the journalists who work for this magazine are not revealing how they obtained this information. So did they hack into his machine? Who knows? And they're really only writing about a handful of these messages. So the time frame for this one inbox. Now, remember, guys, Epstein and Maxwell had various email addresses, just as we all have now, right? And so this is just from one inbox. And in this particular one, it contains messages from 2002 through 2022. However, and that's important, right? Because 2022, that's like a 20-year inbox. But the email exchanges between them are the most active between 2005 to 2008. Now, that's very interesting because we know that Ghislaine was saying, oh, no, I really separated. I didn't really talk to him. And we'll get into that. But the number of emails between Epstein and Maxwell, do you want to take a guess, Sean, the number of emails?
Hundreds.
650.
650.
650, bada boom.
Wow.
I know. So they were like literally in constant contact. So the emails, and I'm just going to summarize here, they include a spreadsheet itemizing nearly 2,000 gifts, luxury items, and payments totaling $1.8 million with notations indicating whether they were for Epstein's friends, his business associates, and or victims, right? So the spreadsheet, which was created by one of Epstein's, and I'm going to use air quotes, accountants, include a $35,000 watch that was earmarked for a former Bill Clinton aide, namely Doug, who I'll talk about later, and a $71,000 purchase of a Lexus car for Epstein's lawyer. Guess which lawyer that would be?
Which one? Indyke Khan.
How about the initials AD?
AD. Oh, not Dershy.
Dershy. Yes, he got a nice car. He got a $71,000 Lexus. I mean, and I'll let you know what his rebuttal is to that during this. Now, other things that they discussed and that are in this spreadsheet that was shared
Can I guess his rebuttal? He kept his pants on while he drove it.
Absolutely. And he was and he was with his wife, his grandchildren, his future like great grandchildren. The whole family was there. Look, I don't know if anyone knows, but Dershowitz is the very first person to have me knocked off Twitter back in 2019. You know why? So back in the day, if somebody said something about you before it was owned by Elon Musk, when I had my original account, I knew that he was a nudist and that he would go to Martha's Vineyard, in the buff, and that was his lifestyle, let's just say. What? So when I learned this, I had been the one to discover that strange things about his first wife who went missing. We could do something else one day if you want about that. However, I then found photos of his daughter starring in an off-Broadway play, off-Broadway, completely nude, full frontal nudity. So it's July 2019. I'm finding this. She's the daughter of Alan Dershowitz. She's in an off-Broadway play. There are hundreds of, now they're scrubbed, but there were hundreds of images of her full frontal, not an attractive girl, you know, a lot of hairy stuff. I'm not going to get really too deep into that, but I posted one because, like, it's full, you know, it's public knowledge. And here are the photos. Come see the play. So, knock, knock, knock. I get, you know, I can't post for 2 weeks. Who did it? Alan Dershowitz. So, yes, Dershowitz has been keeping his undies on and making sure anything that we find of any value to shed light on his personality, right? If you're a nudist, well, I mean, did you really keep your underwear on? Question mark, question mark. So yeah, Alan Dershowitz got a Lexus. And then, you know, we see that Epstein purchased lingerie and chocolates for some teenage girls who would later be, you know, women who stepped forward as adults to lodge complaints against Epstein and Maxwell. And it indicates that Maxwell helped Epstein arrange many of the items, okay? Now, like I said, she contradicts everything that she told Todd Blanche in the great thing that we have in front of us, all of these emails. So she said that her work for Epstein lessened considerably, that it was, quote, very, very diminished by the time he went to jail in June of 2008. And but if we look at the 203 messages in the first 6 months of that year alone, so just the first 6 months of 2008, Sean, they have so many messages that's more than one a day, and that's just from one email address, okay? And they have really creepy stuff all kind of planned out for themselves, and I think people will be very stunned to hear some of this. So Bloomberg had a small mistake. You know, I'm kind of like a stickler for, like, everything's got to be right. So they say that in an email from 1 month before he began his sentence, so that email from her is dated June 24th, 2008. She writes, "I'm devastated. I can't even process. I know this does not help, so I'll stop now." However, that's really 1 week, not 1 month. So if you guys are listening, you know, from Bloomberg, that's just a tiny little, and but you did a great job, Bloomberg. So I'm just going to keep going. So she is very, you can see she's very matronly and very motherly around Epstein. So she helped him strategize over what was happening with the legal thing that he was facing. So, like, in one of the emails dated May 23rd, 2008, he writes to her, question, which one do you prefer, lewd and lascivious conduct or procuring minors for prostitution? At the time, you know, he sent this to her and they're trying to figure out what he's going to negotiate the state charges to, which he had pled guilty to. So her response was very matter of fact. She replies, "I suppose lewd and lascivious conduct. I would prefer lewd and lascivious conduct with a prostitute," you know, I'm spacing there so that the algorithm, "if possible." So we see here, What do you think when you see that he is relying on her judgment to help guide the legal team? And he's got, as you know, the best legal team, but he's relying on her judgment. What does that tell you?
Well, juxtapose that with what she told the guys who went to meet her recently in the prison, the feds. She's basically, you know, in on the decision-making processes to cover up these monstrous crimes, as evidenced by this email communication, versus she hardly knew what he was up to. He changed over time. When I met him, he was a saint. But it was, you know, years later when I was no longer in contact with him that his character deteriorated when I was out the picture. And I'm just a victim of his. Complete contrast.
Completely different. You know, night and day, what we're seeing with our very own eyes, and I'm sure that this is the just beginning, that this magazine will continue to share some of their emails. So this is the beginning of this story. So yeah, I mean, she was very matter of fact. She's telling him what to do and how to plead. And this is at the beginning when he is being, there were at least, if memory serves me, between 30 and 40 girls, young teenage girls, 13 to 14, even though there were neighbors who said that there were girls as young as 12. And we know, because we've talked about it on your show before, that Jean-Luc Brunel did provide Epstein for another one of his birthdays, triplets who were 12 years old. So his neighbors were talking about little girls as young as 12. And here, what's being discussed are girls 13 or 14, who Alan Dershowitz, by the way, took a leading role in going through their social media pages, MySpace at the time, finding out any, quote, dirt. Now, you know how kids are. They're going to brag. They're going to lie. They're going to try to just sound more older than they are. And they're throwing this in their faces. So this, she is now covering up. She is not an Epstein victim, as she tried to claim in her trial. Oh, she was also used, and she applied for money from the Epstein Victims Compensation Fund, just FYI. And people around her, her friends who I have spoken with, they're like, no, she fell for his lies too. Well, this tells us right here that she was in the thick of it, right there, just like Virginia Giuffre always said. She was just as bad as Epstein, if not worse. And here, she's basically, in a way, heading this attorney team of like the best attorneys in the world, saying this is what you should do, and he does. Okay, so this is a major blow for her. Not that anybody believed her anyway, but this is just a major blow, and I don't think anyone is really focusing that much on what was happening at that time with what's happening with this disclosure. So a month later, Epstein sends an email directing Maxwell to distribute an 11-page letter to their social network. The letter is a draft, which is on Alan Dershowitz's letterhead. So now Epstein is writing a letter for Alan Dershowitz, and he's sending it to Maxwell for them to decide what Alan Dershowitz is going to say. So in the letter, it characterizes the S abuse allegations as, quote, highly fictionalized, and described the Palm Beach police investigation as raw suet. And then it goes on where Epstein says to Maxwell, you need to review and then organize and help to distribute things. Dershowitz was contacted by Bloomberg magazine. Guess what? He does not recall that letter.
Of course. How convenient.
he just has no memory. Not only is he wearing the tidy whities, he has no memory. Okay. So a month later, Epstein pled guilty to two Florida state charges. Felony solicitation of a P-R-O-S-T, blah, okay, and procurement of minors to engage in PROS, blah, blah, blah. And he also registered as an S offender. Now, there were some references to Trump in these email exchanges. Now, one of them, and although Bloomberg does not know how, I think I figured it out, so I'll be sharing this. So one of the few references to Trump started basically the first on September 14 of 2006. And this is 2 months after Epstein was charged in Florida. And it includes a list of 51 politicians, business executives, and Wall Street power brokers. And, you know, people like Jimmy Kaine, who's the former executive of Bear Stearns, Jess Staley, who would later be named the CEO of Barclays, and Trump. Now, Kaine died in 2021, so he was not available for a comment. However, Staley was also, you know, they reached out to him, what do you have to say? No comment. However, Maxwell writes to him, please review the list and add or remove Pepys. And then Epstein responds, remove Trump. And then the two, Maxwell and Epstein, discussed additions to the list and at least one other deletion. Now, the list, the, you know, the, this magazine did not know exactly where the list came from. However, because I've been covering this every single day for 6+ years, I know that in 2016, he was indicted, right? And then 4 days later, he was arrested. So that the timeline suggests that Ghislain was getting letters that would be presented to the judge. If you recall, you know, there was letters, let's say, by almost everyone who knew him at the time, presented to the judge, say, you know, Bill Clinton, that he was instrumental in forming the Clinton Initiative, letters from his supposed ex-girlfriend, Eva Anderson Dubin, how she trusts him with her children, so on and so forth. So that given the timeline and the fact that they're reaching out to over 50 people and he has Ghislain doing the grunt work, I would suspect that he said no to Trump because they very possibly by this time had their falling out over that property. Now, do you want me to get into that property and who owned it and who owned it before that? Because Wexner comes up.
Yeah, I've got a bit to say on Wexner and a bit to say on Mandelson, but we'll get to that. You just keep going for now.
Okay, so let me go into the history of the property. So as we all know, it is said that Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein had a falling out over a piece of real estate. And in this email, the name of the person who owned the house that Trump purchased behind Epstein's back and which is supposed to be the ending of their friendship is named. And so in the email dated August 23rd, 2007, from Ghislain to Epstein, she writes, you have to presume they went to Donald Trump, then Gossman, the docks in West Palm Beach, Pascal, etc. So like in my book, Jeffrey Epstein, Predator Spy, I'm just going to read you an excerpt, okay? Because it goes into the whole history. I'm going to skip over some things, but I just want to show how this belonged to Wexner. So I'm going to begin. In 2004, Jeffrey Epstein and Donald Trump were best buddies. There were phone messages removed from Epstein's trash by the Palm Beach Police Department showing Trump called him several times. Epstein wanted Trump's advice on the intricacies of moving the pool in the house he planned to buy. So the two men drove to the now dilapidated bank-owned property. So what Epstein wanted to buy was the former Reitzman Palm Beach estate. However, and it had been on the auction, and I'm skipping over, that's why I'm not really reading literally. It had been on the auction block for 2 years. It had belonged to Leslie Wexner from May 1st, 1985 to May 27, 1988. At which point, Wexner sold it to nursing home magnate Abe Grossman. Now, Grossman was involved in some theft with the government. So then, of course, that's why the house it becomes foreclosed. He gets into legal jeopardy. However, I wrote in Jeffrey Epstein, Predator Spy, that it was because this happened before Epstein had a house in Palm Beach, that based on what I had been able to ascertain and discover by talking to various people, that it was my my thought that this was going to be Epstein's first house in Palm Beach. He would go on to buy the one he did, but that Wexner was involved even with that. And the other person that was described very quickly in that note, Joel Pascal, who actually is a name we should all become more familiar with because it, not only was he one of those people that wrote the most lewd birthday messages in Epstein's 50th birthday book, and that's just one birthday book, guys, but he's also, he sat on the board of the Palm Beach Police Department and the Palm Beach Fire Department. And so, you know, they're going around asking questions. However, that house belonged to Wexner at one time, and that, you know, we know where that came from. So what did you have to say about Wexner?
So I was just looking at Wexner's wealth and wondering about Wexner's wealth and the transfers to Epstein and what happened after all of this and what is continuing to happen to this day. So when I was looking at Wexner's wealth, I knew he, you know, his company was the Limited. But then I see they've split that company up now so that you've got Victoria's Secret is a separate company listed on the stock market. And then you've also got his other company. Have you looked at how he split it all up and they've changed the names, everything? Because I was just wondering whether, you know, people were campaigning against the Limited and that's why they changed the names.
Well, my abuser's father, Meshulam Rickless, and he were very close. And they structured their companies in the same way. And frankly, most companies. So each organization is given its own LLC, let's say, or corporation before LLCs were used. And so Victoria's Secret was always Victoria's Secret. The Limited did change their name from the Limited to L Brands at around the time that Epstein was first exposed to the public. Wexner owns many properties. I think that the point we have to remember about Wexner and his role in Epstein's life is that in the 1990s, Epstein facilitated Southern Air Transport, which was formerly Air America, which is a CIA-owned company before they started using shells. And shell, or a cutout, or a long arm, all of these words, it just means like putting it, their airline, putting it in either a fake person, a fake name, it's either a company or a person. In this instance, and it was in, you know, mainstream media at the time that it happened, although these articles have now been scrubbed. It was said that Southern Air Transport that moved from Florida, the hotbed of transporting substance, if you get my drift, by CIA, right? So the whole thing of the, we have the tail end at that time period of the Iran-Contra, but the ongoing problem of CIA with other intelligence agencies working covertly from the very, you know, from for many, many years in gathering substance to buy guns and to fund wars in either us, right, or, you know, you guys or other countries, so on and so forth. However, the way the media portrayed it at the time was that, oh, well, Southern Air has moved to Ohio in order to help Wexner safely move his materials to the Orient. We can only imagine what was being done in the Orient if it needed Southern Air Transport. But Southern Air Transport being a CIA subsidiary, and this is what we see. We saw it. We see it all the time. These companies declare bankruptcy, bankruptcy, bankruptcy. Southern Air Transport among them. They were there for only 3 years, took taxpayer advantages, which is how Donald Trump built the Trump Tower. He got a $20 million at the time. It was not considered a lot of money, but today, $20 million, you know, it's, at the time it was a lot. But these shysters who work covert activities such as Wexner, or even Trump, we can say, because he took advantage of a lot of tax loopholes. They will declare bankruptcy. And what happens? Just the same thing as what happened in 2008 with the banking industry. The taxpayers have to step in. Their funds are used to cover this so that Wexner's use of Southern Air left the taxpayers in Ohio in a lurch, because Southern Air, they packed up overnight and they left without paying their bills, so on and so forth. So we do have to remember that this is a level that is not discussed regularly, and we should, don't you think?
Yeah, it says here, Wexner no longer owns companies through the parent company, L Brands, as Bath and Body Works and Victoria's Secret spun off into independent companies. And I was looking at the balance sheets of those. Bath and Body Works has got $1.5 billion negative equity and huge amounts of debt. And Victoria's Secret has got approximately $1 billion negative equity. It says now that Wexner owns shares in the AI company CoreWeave and has a significant investment in its growth. That's according to a July 2025 Forbes report. Through his family's investment firm, he also owns the New Albany Company and holds real estate investments, a museum collection, and art museum trustees. And I'm looking at the share price of CoreWeave. That's gone. It went from 50 in May, before May 2025, up to almost 200, back down to a low of 89. Now it's back up near 120. So he's probably making big time money out of AI now. He's moving his investments, it looks like, from retail to AI and tech.
I mean, yeah, I think that he took a hit. Netflix did a special on Abercrombie and Fitch, one of his other companies, discrimination with hiring people of color or people who were not good looking enough. And then there were the allegations that are still outstanding, Mike Jeffries and that whole scandal that hasn't really been resolved, although Jeffries has been allowed to go home because he's too old. They're all too old, and you know, they have no memory, and they have all kinds of things. What we have to keep in mind with these, the way that they make their money, is that what was, let's say, exposed during the Drexel Burnham Lambert situation with Michael Milken. And we know that, well, I don't know if everyone knows, but Leon Black was Michael Milken's right-hand man. I've written a lot about that on my Substack and in my books. There's a lot of insider trading. And so, for example, there was supposed to be a front page story about my situation years before I became involved in this. And that's when I was trying to get my book, The Billionaire's Women, out in the public. And the person who stepped forward with a whole group of guys was the grandson, and I am almost not, I probably, of somebody very high up, let's say in Richard Nixon's administration, who said to me, because I was like, well, why do you, you know, why are you interested in, I didn't know at that time what I know now. And what he said was, well, Michelle Mrickless really S-overed my grandfather. You know, he bought some stock based on his word. So, okay. But these people, they would buy a company, strip it of its assets, if you remember, sell it into pieces, and the company would be worth nothing, leaving all anyone who invested, you know, with nothing. So apparently this man became interested in my work because of the fact that, you know, his politician, very high level politician, I probably have named him in my book, but I won't name him here. And so they this is how they do it. And it would not surprise me in the least if Wexner and the rest of them, like Leon Black and even Ghislaine Maxwell, who in this, they're talking in these emails, they're also talking about stock and what are they going to do when they have shared stock in certain companies, that there's a lot of insider trading stuff going on that the public is never going to know about, you know. So AI, does it surprise me that Wexner is doing AI? No, because that's the new thing, isn't it?
Absolutely, that's the new thing. They think that's, you know, there's going to be bigger innovations than with the internet. So with the insider trading emails then with Maxwell and Epstein, which companies were they trading, does it say?
No, they don't say. They allude to a mutually shared company, and they allude to how she was going to wind down the business as he went to jail. But what I thought was really, really peculiar is that she tells Todd Blanche, for example, that she's in a relationship with Ted Waite from 2003 to 2010. However, just days after Epstein, the Palm Beach mansion is raided, she sends him detailed instructions on a sperm donation for their shared fertility treatment. They're trying to have a baby while she is in a relationship with Ted Waite, just as Epstein is, being arrested. She's still trying to figure this out. She writes to him, "You can do the sample at home," she directed, before adding that it has to be within 90 minutes of my procedure. So she's getting a procedure. He has to have a procedure. And then she writes to him, whatever is leaked out, I can't say the word, must be collected. She's very firm with him. So, I mean, the fact that they're trying to have a child, imagine a child conceived by Epstein and Maxwell, and she's with Ted Waite. I mean, what is this? Isn't this the most, like, it's a, like Dracula, right? And Frankenstein. Go ahead, mate.
No, absolutely. That's totally shocking. But can anything surprise us anymore that these monstrous conspiracies, these monstrous two can concoct?
I mean, it boggles the mind with these people. But the fact that she's such a liar, and here she's trying to have a child with him. But okay, all right. So then 8 months later, he says he credits Maxwell. So I'm just reading you portions of the emails. There weren't that many, by the way, but there were enough to show us what their relationship was really like. That he got very sick while he was at his ranch in New Mexico. He had, quote, a medical emergency. He writes, "I was very ill. I almost fainted today." Now, he misspells the word fainted. And then he said, "I needed oxygen. Glenn came to help," he wrote to one of the assistants. Okay. So then she says to him, because, you know, she's trying to get him to meet an interesting woman. And I think everyone's going to want to hear this. So we know that Epstein has been connected with Sergey Brin, the co-founder of Google. However, at the time, he was with his then wife, Anne Wojcicki. And if you guys in the comments want to just help me pronounce that word, feel free. But she's the co-founder of 23andMe. And she was also the CEO. Now, she began that company in 2006 in the early part. So Gillette writes to Epstein, "Be very nice to her, not stupid. She is interested in mapping DNA, etc. She is key," and she draws a smiley face. She sends this to him on December 29 of 2006. So in an email to an assistant a few days later, he writes that he was on the island with Brin, right? And then, however, neither Brin nor Anne wanted to reply to, you know, this email or anything about being on the island. Around the same time, the office of Bill Richardson, then the governor of New Mexico, wanted to know if he could use Epstein's private jet for an upcoming, quote, peace mission to the Sudan. So, I mean, he writes, she's asking him if he can use the plane, right? Like, just lend out the plane. We haven't heard much about how Epstein lent out the plane. So this is a glimpse into this was also happening. So she writes to him, and he writes back to her, Glenn, half the price of a charter plane would be around $183,000. Is this possible? So Richardson's scheduling director was asking a lot of questions. And then Maxwell forwarded the request to Epstein, to which he replies, have him call me today, exclamation mark. Now, Richardson apparently used the plane of another man, another like multi-billionaire who died when he was 100 years old, by the name of S. Daniel Abraham, and he used that jet. But I just think it's interesting how, you know, you have people like Bill Clinton hitching rides, not just on Jeffrey Epstein's plane, but also Ron Burkle, who's another very mysterious guy that perhaps one day we should sit down and just talk about Ron Burkle, who just blows my mind in so many ways. But we have people like Richardson, who Virginia alleged, if you remember, that he was among the people that she was instructed to make happy. And he's like these guys are cheap. On top of it, they don't want to spend money to hire their own private plane. You can just rent one, right? But no, they want Epstein to step forward. And Epstein is more than happy, apparently, to make these people happy. Oh, that said, in one of the gifts, many gifts that he gave a gift to Dershowitz, he gave a gift to other people. There are gifts to Leslie Wexner. Now, what did he gift? Now, and this is interesting because we know that Wexner has clutched his pearls. I didn't know, just like everyone, I didn't know. They've all stepped down from their positions. Remember, boom, boom, boom. Everybody's stepping down from the CEO of this company, CEO of that company. They all stepped down. However, Wexner has been uber silent. And the only thing he ever said was, Epstein stole from me. And then I've heard other people, mainstream mainly, and some indie podcasters say, no, Wexner was indeed blackmailed. Well, if he was indeed blackmailed, number one, why would Epstein buy him like an almost like a $100,000 little cart that, you know, can go on different, like you can just drive it around, like one of the carts that he had, like those like motorcycle bikes, I don't know what to call them, that you can just have on the island and it goes over rough terrain. But he gets him one for New Albany, where he lives. So these gifts continue from Epstein to Wexner. I think that puts Wexner in a different light. He's now this recipient, like Alan Dershowitz, of gifts. Well, I mean, that's the first I've heard of Epstein reciprocating in a manner like that to Wexner. What's your take on that?
So these emails put all of the stories about them being victims of Epstein as just absolute BS, cockamamie. And with the planes then, we know these guys are all freeloaders, especially the politicians. Look how the Bush crime family used Enron and Kenneth Lay and his plane. And they basically, in exchange, allowed Enron single-handedly to write the energy policy of the United States government. So Enron could make billions upon billions at the taxpayers' expense, jack the prices up of energy. I think California really got screwed over. And then we saw Kenneth Lay get arrested and he got unalived. So these stories just have so many parallels. These mooch politicians, they're like ordaining over a feeding trough of taxpayers' money. Yeah. So whoever they can pal up with and mooch from, whether it's Epstein, whether it's Kenneth Lay, they will allocate some of that taxpayers' money to their cronies through government contracts. And in exchange, they get to use the planes. They get political contributions, millions and millions, gifts, you name it. And that is how government is run, folks. It's not run for us. It's run for the wealthiest class that's in the same club as these people, who they party with, who they do these rituals with, and who they swap all their goodies with.
No, I think that's a great way of summarizing this. I mean, we do see in these emails that the stories that we've been fed are completely just lies, that the relationships are nothing like what we have been, well, not you and I, but what most people have been led to believe, that this is a much darker world, that people are much more, let's just say, conniving, and that there's just this sinister aspect to it that we really have not even looked into. Now, among these people is Doug Band, who, again, came. Doug Band, by the way, for those of you who are unaware, was Bill Clinton's right-hand man. He is also was very close to Maxwell, and he is included in this article because there was a gift of a very expensive watch that Ghislaine purchased, you know, on Epstein's dollar to give to Doug Band. And Band, according to these like emails, was eager to get a flight and reached out to Maxwell, offered him a free flight, then all kinds of really weird things. However, they did discuss, let's say, Epstein and Maxwell, a $35,000 watch that they wanted to gift to him. And this is 4 days before Christmas, and Maxwell told Epstein that she made the purchase. So she writes on December 21st, 2005, to Epstein, "Good, make sure he gets it for Xmas." And then she writes back, "Bought the watch for Doug for $35,000. And, you know, if you're someone who's accustomed to a lot of money, you're not going to say $35,000. So that's another little clue, because, you know, like if I tell somebody I mean $10,000, you know, that's, you know, if I'm talking to somebody who's in that world, I'm going to refer to the, you know, we're not going to just always spell out everything. So she writes, "Bought the watch for $35,000, wiring the money today," and then she signs off G. So a little bit, let's see, Doug Band sort of began working in the White House in 1995 during Clinton's presidency. He was initially an unpaid intern, and then he served on the White House counsel's office staff for 4 years, and then he became the special assistant to the president, and basically one of the youngest deputy assistants ever to serve a president. And then he served as, when Clinton was no longer the president, he became his aide, traveling to nearly 125 countries and over 2,000 cities. He served as his chief advisor until 2012, becoming what people refer to as the key architect of Clinton's post-presidency. So it goes on to give him credit for helping to set up the Clinton Global Initiative and advising the William J. Clinton Foundation in its formative years. So it goes on giving him credit for this and this and this and that. Now, it claims that Band met Epstein in 2002 when Clinton and Epstein went on their trip together. Now, their now infamous trip to Africa that we all know about. Now, allegedly, Band said that he didn't like Epstein and that he, quote, urged Clinton to stop his relationship with him. Now, I find that to be also, that I got from his Wikipedia, to be just another excuse. They're all like, oh, Epstein's a bad guy. I told him not to be there. But we know Clinton's backstory with minors. So for somebody like Doug Band, who is photographed with Ghislaine, with Epstein, who's very close to, we know, is a serial predator, Bill Clinton, and he's going to say, "Oh, I warned him, don't be around Epstein," so that, you know, these people, like you said, I mean, they get rewarded. And what happens? Is Doug Band ever going to tell the truth? Is Leslie Wexner ever going to tell the truth? Is Alan Dershowitz ever going to tell the truth? That's not going to happen. What I do see happening, and tell me if you agree, we have been hammering this home to people for over 6 years now. people have, it's now become, like you said, when we started this behind the curtain, this is the biggest story. It's bigger today than it was when it first hit the media in 2019. We have to keep doing what we're doing, sharing as much as we can with the audience so that people can keep demanding that the Justice Department release not just the files, release the videos, release the audios. They have them. You know, I think that the fact that the public has applied so much pressure and they're so interested in this story, and the fact that now we all talk to each other on social media, I think this is why we were able to get this latest drop of these emails. It didn't come from the White House. It didn't come from Congress. It didn't come from Trump, but it's coming from somewhere. Don't you think that this is us, and this is the result of our work? I mean, not just you and me, you know, like all the people watching us and how everyone has gotten involved. I think it's a direct result.
Continued public pressure is keeping this story alive, keeping Virginia's spirit and mission alive. And it has achieved some things. It's a bleak outlook, but the apparatus, the network, is designed so that the politicians are interchangeable and completely replaceable. They're like a level of insulation for the elite pulling the strings above them. So, you know, the result that we did see in recent days was Keir Starmer firing Mandelson because of all of these revelations. But when you dig deeper into it, you find out that just like Prince Andrew was briefed by his Royal Security Protection team on Jeffrey's background and the risks, etc., so was Starmer. I'm going to allege that Starmer was briefed and was fully aware of the nature of what was going on with Mandelson, and that Mandelson knew about Epstein's history, his conviction, and that Starmer, when he hired Mandelson to come and welcome Donald Trump to the UK, knew that it was a risk in the background, and his advisors had told him that this was evident, it was there. But what happens is someone like Starmer just fires Mandelson as if he's completely innocent in all of this, was not aware that Mandelson was doing things with Jeffrey after Jeffrey's conviction. And Starmer's the one who's actually now taking the right action to punish someone such as Mandelson. So Starmer comes out looking all innocent and like he's doing the right thing. This is how the whole system is structured to manipulate people, I believe. That's my opinion.
I would concur. I believe that too. On the bright side, Mandelson doesn't have his cushy position anymore. You know, so we won 50% of that battle. I didn't think he was going to get fired, although he had lost two other positions before, right? Wasn't he fired from two other things previously?
Well, that's what I'm saying, that they're all completely replaceable and recyclable. They just wheel them back out when the heat's off one area and they need someone to come in to cover another area.
Agree. And so that we have, people are beginning to say, we don't have a, quote, blackmail operation. We don't have an intelligence operation. Actually, we do. And we have victims, and they're being very loud, thank goodness. Finally, they're being allowed to speak. So we had a spreadsheet with expenses that, you know, show where Epstein's money went, appearing, let's say, on the spreadsheet. So Nadia Marcinkova, who is probably very well known for having been referred to by Epstein as his S-slave, who, as legend has it, was purchased when she was 14 from her parents in an Eastern European country, said, now here's what I find interesting too, that she had her attorney, so these women are probably concerned, these co-conspirator women, right? So we have Nadia, and I'll share with you what happened here. But we have these women now having their attorneys respond for them, which I find quite fascinating, because she was in the non-prosecution agreement, basically naming her and Sarah Kellen and the others, and nothing's going to happen to you because we gave him this lenient deal and you're never going to be prosecuted. But so we see here how Nadia was procuring. And in one, Nadia tells Epstein she would send a photo of a Swedish woman that she met. And then she writes, she says she can do Thai massage. She is not cute enough for anything else. And then in parentheses, she writes the numbers 19, which I'm assuming is the woman's age. So Epstein replied, the sweet doesn't look so fat. So now Marcinkova has lawyered up, as I said, and her attorney is a woman by the name of Erica Dubno. And she writes, oh, well, Jeffrey Epstein was a master manipulator. He physically, sexually, and emotionally abused, dehumanized, and completely controlled her for years. He coerced Nadia and referred to her as his S-slave. So another woman, Natalia Malyshev, sent Epstein at least 20 emails with the first names and ages of women in the subject line. So the subject line would have just the first name, the age, and my new friend, let's say, for example, 17, she wrote in one, attaching a photos of a girl described as a Russian model. Now, she, too, refused to comment for the story. So in another email, Natalia forwards Epstein a description of a young woman who, quote, be potentially rewarded. Listen to this. For recruiting others on a New York City college campus. Now, Bloomberg decided to withhold details about her identity. However, we can see here that everybody was procuring, that there were people in positions where they had access to many people in colleges. So we're not seeing too much of the procurement of, let's say, 13 or 14-year-olds, perhaps that's being done from a separate email. Remember, this is just one email. He had several. And now they're looking for women that are 17, 18, 19. And from the old days, during a mainstream media story that talked about Epstein going to Harvard, he shows up at Harvard one day. He's flanked by beautiful women who are in their young 20s. And so he does this visually, right? So young 20s, and that people were a little concerned, oh, are they being trafficked? Because this happened after the fact, right? What's going on with these women? Should we try to save them? There was just a lot of talk amongst other women that saw this. You know, not necessarily the men there, but the women were concerned. And so that he could shield himself with women who appear to be, you can still be procured and your mind can be hijacked, let's say, and you can be lied to and you can still be a victim, even if you're over the age of consent. But what appears to be happening is he's now very duplicitous, like the magician that you talked about at the beginning of our chat. Where you, okay, so he's hanging out, there are beautiful women, blah, blah, blah. And then somebody who doesn't know any better is lured. And instead of being with, quote, one of these beautiful women, what happens? They trade this person out for a 14-year-old, right? I mean, how easy is that? So, okay, go to the room, she'll give you a massage, and then in walks a 14-year-old. I mean, that's how I see it.
Yeah, so, that's really easy, Kirby.
Yeah, I mean, so then, no, so Maxwell is now, as he's preparing himself for life behind this make-believe jail, because we know he only went to day jail, she's helping him wind down his empire. Well, she wants to know, should they sell his Bentley, his helicopter? Who should she fire? So come on. Everything she told Todd Blanche is a lie, because she is the one in charge of the quote the Epstein enterprise, let's say, right? Like, you're not going to do this for somebody you don't know, or for a company that you don't know the intricate details of. So she knows. And this proves it right here, just with that. But then there's an attack against all the women that were coming against her, or like Virginia. So she goes on the offensive against Virginia Roberts. And she, in one email dated January 3rd, 2015, she circulated a two-decade-old report from the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office, stamped confidential. The 20-page report recounted how Giuffre, at the age of 15, had accused two male acquaintances of the R-word. The document said the complaint had been dropped due to the victim's lack of credibility. Now, I want to stop here and say that anyone who is young, who has been passed from person to person before because she had been transportationed, I don't know how else to say it, to be safe on this platform, she was already in that world with Ron Eppinger. Now, it's worth noting that Rod Eppinger knew Jeffrey Epstein. And that, for example, in my book, newest book, book one, titled Gerald Ford, believe it or not, Gerald Ford was Epstein's pal back in 1982. And I show through Gerald Ford about the world of the so-called S slaves, young sex, and monarch wives. And you can only get that on my website. However, that I think that will be the most important book I write, because it will show a connection and explain how this system is baked into the highest office in the land, not just at the level of, let's say, the intelligence agencies, but baked within the seat of anybody who sits in the Oval Office, okay? And how, and in this book, it will take the reader from a man who nobody thought was important before, Gerald Ford, other than, oh, you know, he just headed the assassination thing. What was that report, the Warren Commission study that decided, oh, there was just one person responsible for the shooting, you know? Okay, he did that, and then he pardoned Richard Nixon. However, in this book, we will see through a straight line connection to not just Epstein, but to many things that are not being reported on, except maybe being glossed over, and nobody is connecting these dots. In that book, and book one is available now, I just published it a couple of weeks ago, it shows how this is baked into our public offices and how it began and what's going on. But in this one email where she's just attacking Virginia and her so-called lack of credibility, they count on that. They count on the fact that you're young, you don't know what you're doing, you've already experienced R word, you've been transportation, let's say, and they're not going to take her word over, say, somebody like Ghislaine Maxwell with the wonderful accent and the posh upbringing, at least as it was presented to the world. But that she then goes on to say that there's some drug use and possible involvement in witchcraft. Now, this is an important thing. Do you have that photo of the statue that one of the victims sent me that was on Epstein's Island?
Right now, I'm just flexing all your book covers, because there's so many of them. How long did it take you to write all of them?
Well, that's not even all of them. That's an old book. I think that's an old one. I have more. Well, I write every day. And I just keep going. I just keep going. My new ones are, the Gerald Ford one is there. And, my Leslie Wexner book is there. So in there, I go into some of the things that have never been discussed and what, let's say, Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein used to call Wexner. He had a private name, and how there were things in the house, in the mansion, that show that Wexner's role was much more significant than the public has ever seen. I show and I explain with receipts of Wexner's role, and that again is also book one. Look, I think this is the time to expose. This is the world that has existed. It's not because this is a story. This is the world that we have not really seen. So now on the screen, you have Doug Band, who's Bill Clinton's right-hand man for a very long time, with Ghislaine Maxwell at a time that I'm sure she didn't realize that the law would eventually catch up with her. That said, I want to add that the reason she will never be, let's say, Epstein'd, is because she and her family, Isabel and Christine, if we're going to look at things, have worked for the government of the United States, the government of for the UK. We know that Isabel and her twin sister, Christine, they had one of the first search engines, Magellan, which helped, and I explained it in one of our earlier conversations on your channel, how that hid anything having to do with Jimmy Savile from ever appearing on the search engine. So in much the same way that very likely the Google search engine is preventing things from coming up, we have the early part of it with the Maxwell sisters. And, you know, and in the early days, we could find documents showing that the Maxwell family was working for the FBI, providing them services, internet-related services. We know during the Obama administration, Ghislaine Maxwell's nephews, the two sons of, I believe, Isabel, worked in Hillary Clinton's... she will not... The reason Donald Trump wishes her well is because she worked for the U.S. government.
Absolutely. I've got the picture of the statue up now. What's the story here?
So there were many emails that were not just emails, but emails, documents, and other things that, because of Virginia's lawsuit against Ghislaine Maxwell, among other things, and the depositions that were taken. And these dropped in early part of last year. So that would have been January, I believe, of 2024. One of the victims, and I couldn't find it because, you know, I had to get ready for this podcast, or I could find it for the next time. But one of the victims did discuss witchcraft and sorcery and all kinds of things having to do with Epstein Maxwell world. Now, one of the victims did send me this photo that she took while she was on Epstein's Island. And then we see how Ghislaine in these emails is throwing it back at Virginia, that she's somehow involved with witchcraft. So, you know, the fact that we have story after story of hooded, cloaked, mysterious men, like something out of Eyes Wide Open, is not a far-fetched thing to think was happening, let's say, in his world. He did, by the way, put a hex on Vicky Ward. She talks about it. When she was pregnant with twins, he said to her, if you don't drop this, meaning the farmer sister part of the article that she wrote, I believe, in 2002, I'm putting a hex on you. And Vicky Ward believed it. So that this other part that no one talks about, well, this may be true. What do you think when you see a statue like that being on Epstein's Island?
Well, this totally ties into what David Icke has told us about how the bigger picture above the string pullers of the politicians is the worshipping of the ancient bloodlines of the Illuminati, which go back thousands of years. So you've got all these figures, such as we're seeing on the screen, and the various gods that they worship, cult of Baal, etc., and how they all get together and do these rituals. So, you know, this is symptomatic of that, I believe.
Yeah, in my book, A Merchant of Death, Leslie Wexner, I go into that, and I also describe all of the odd things that are on, or let's say, on Little St. James, called O-R-G-Y Island, and describe how they are connected to that world, right? And their significance, ancient, because he had a lot of ancient statues, like Greek references and mythology. And also that Leslie Wexner may have, in fact, used a certain old, if I go into it, it's going to be too long of a podcast, for his inspiration for the Victoria angels with the models with the wings, how he used a she demon, Lilith, let's just say it. I'm going to say it, how he used Lilith as the inspiration for the wings of Victoria's angels. I mean, the whole thing, if you scratch beneath the surface and you really have to scrub and scratch a lot, because mainstream has done their very best and these people have done their very best. They have the most expensive public relations teams on the planet. And they have people inserted into our world, you know, who's telling the truth, who's not. We have to really scratch beneath the surface. It's not just what we see, although we're very happy to sit here and talk about the emails. It's what else is laying there, many layers beneath the surface.
Yep, and that's why you guys should check out Kirby's books, so you can get deeper and deeper, go more and more below those layers if you have got the stomach for it, because it is quite dark energy that you're absorbing, isn't it? The hard-hitting reality of the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we've summarized today is there's more to the story of the century, right? I mean, this is a viper's nest. It's more than Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. And, you know, I think that what you and I can do is just to continue to share and continue to explore, examine, so that people can keep this demand, the tapes, the videos. There's a list. We have a lot of the names. Demand real proof now. Donald Trump is up. People are really beginning to sort of look into the future. What's going to happen to Donald Trump? If this becomes the kind of scandal that we see it has become, it's very likely he'll have to step down like Richard Nixon, that we will see a repeat of Nixon. And then what happens? Whoever's the guy with the eyeliner, he'll step up, you know, the Peter Thiel guy connected to Leslie Wexner. His face is so unusual with the eyeliner and everything, but he will immediately pardon Donald Trump, right?
Just like Clinton pardoned his brother, Roger, for getting busted with the white powder.
Yeah, I mean, how do you see this playing out?
I think that the only way to let the pressure out of the system is for the government to be replaced. Because if they can't fulfill their campaign promises to hold these people to account, and not only that, reward the poster child for human transportation, as in Ghislaine, by giving her a cushy prison and possible clemency, possible release coming soon. If they're going to do the complete opposite of what they promised the public, and the public is so sick of it right now that this story's been running for about 3 months since Elon Musk tweeted Trump was in the Epstein files. The only way they're going to get this pressure out of the system is either the politicians are replaced, or As Gerald Salenti says, when all else fails, they take you to war, folks. They make a foreign enemy the headline news. They know if they go to war with China or Russia, whenever a country goes to war, they rally around its leaders, and that will completely get all of this Epstein stuff. The thorn in the side will be pulled out of the side, and everyone will be focused on war. Putin will be the new bad guy, or the leader of China will be the new bad guy. And we were supposed to end the war in Ukraine, but that never happened. And the military-industrial complex will be happy. And the network will be happy, because what do they make the most money off, folks? What's all this spying about and compromising people about in the first place? Is geopolitics, power plays, and war. War is the biggest racket of them all. The most money is made during war for these businesses. They can take a banana like Dick Cheney did. They can sell it to a soldier in the canteen, the chow hall in Iraq, and bill the taxpayers $50 for it, folks. That's how much money these guys make. So look for a war near you soon. Venezuela, it might be Venezuela. They've got some of the biggest oil reserves in the world. That would be a nice prize for the oil industrial complex. But if they can't get, if they can't put this fire out, then I think war, because before they'll let the people replace the politicians, I think they'll go to war.
Yeah, I mean, let's hope that that doesn't happen. Although Donald Trump is changing the name to the Department of War, which is indicative of what you are saying.
And he's gone from saying that Zelensky was a fool to keep the war going. You know, they had the peace deal that Boris Johnson scuppered, over 1 million dead on his hands. Now that the current administration is starting to say that Putin doesn't want peace. He's the aggressor, and they're escalating, basically. They're escalating.
Yeah, it's another PSYOP. It's another PSYOP. But, you know, I think that what we can do is we can just refuse to let it go. Just refuse to let it go.
Well, people like you, Kirby, and Ryan Dawson are the tip of the spear on Virginia's mission, as far as I'm concerned. I see you doing the most research, the most consistent content. And that is exactly what Virginia advocated that the activists do.
You know, I want to share something that Virginia. So about Prince Andrew. Virginia's goal was never to sue Prince Andrew, by the way. And when Andrew Lowney first reached me, I forgot to share this with him. Perhaps he's listening now, because I know he's making adjustments to his book and citing me in certain places. However, Virginia had me write a letter. She just wanted Andrew to own up to it and apologize. So she had me write a letter, which is still up on my Medium. I'll try to find where it is. And share it with everyone. And I wrote it for her. Initially, she was the one that was going to put it up somewhere. And that's what we were planning. She was going to put it up somewhere. She was going to sign it herself. And all she really wanted was an apology. She wasn't looking to sue him or anything. However, David Boies, whose attorney told her at the time when I sent her the letter, I said, okay, here, take a look at it. It's the final draft. What do you think? And she was like, I love it, Kirby, but now David is telling me that I can't sign my name to it. So we, you know, if she couldn't do something, I would do it for her, either reach out to somebody who was antagonizing her on her behalf, you know, maybe sent, like Laura Goldman, sent by Ghislaine Maxwell. And so Virginia would have me step in front of her and deflect, protect her, which I happily did and I will happily continue to do. And so she had me write this letter. I decided, okay, let me tweak it and I will sign the survivors, you know, the people who support, let's say Virginia, but I put it on my Medium because that's the only thing I had at the time. But then I believe, and I, if memory serves me, he did the thing with, on Emily Maitlis and all of that. And time was running out anyway. And she was being pressured by David Boies to do something more. And I think, so again, that wasn't her first thing. And it wasn't her desire to settle. You know, for anyone who thinks she was out for a buck, she wasn't. She wanted people to be held accountable. And now, you know, allegedly, from what I read, people are demanding her family stepped forward, her two brothers and her sister-in-law, to say, well, Prince Andrew has to, perhaps, it wasn't enough that he settled, let's say, out of court, that he has to be held accountable. I just saw, I don't know if you looked it up, but I pulled up a recent photo of what Prince Andrew looks like. Oh my God, his face is melting off. He's put on so much weight. He looks like a man pushing 80, at least to me. And I'm happy that he's suffering. I hate to really wish suffering upon anyone, but that's really all she wanted. And he could have apologized. He could have said, I didn't know you were 17. I didn't know you were being pressured into doing this. He could have lied the way he has lied, you know, but he didn't. And so she did have to then sue. And according to what Virginia shared with me at the time, she was pressured into settling, which is not what she wanted. But that was really not her intention. And you've got this news for the first time ever. Nobody knows this except for you and your followers now.
Thank you. And his grotesque looks are a reflection of his dark, conflicted, tormented soul. You can get a glimpse into what's going on inside him right there, because it is not good, folks. It is dark energy. All right. Let's wrap it up here then, Kirby. Is there anything you'd like to say in conclusion?
Let's just keep fighting.
Absolutely. We will keep broadcasting these new stories. Huge thank you for coming on, my friend. I will let you go and I will close the show. And all of Kirby's links, I'll put them in the live chat again right now. The YouTube channel, the website, we can get the books, etc. And if you're watching on replay, they're in the description box. All right. Hope to speak soon, Kirby. Take care.
Have a good day, Sean. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, folks. Yeah, another phenomenal interview from Kirby. You know, I get emails from her. I see her Substack, and she's always got the latest information. If you want to get tuned in to this case before anyone else reports it, subscribe to Kirby's Substack. At least subscribe to her YouTube channel. It's free. And last night, I interviewed Clark Fredericks, who unalived his perpetrator. It was a guy in the Boy Scouts who did the monstrous deeds to him and other people. And Clark came on, and he's a brilliant speaker. I think we spoke for almost 2 hours. If you missed that one last night, when I finish this one, it will take you over to it. Definitely not one to be missed. And I think we've got Lauren coming on Wednesday.